the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Hello, Brains. How are you? I'm talking to you, too.
Yeah. We're good.
Yeah, I'm doing good.
All right. Well, good. All right. Because this is going to be one of, I believe, my favorite, most favorite interviews of the year. I'm talking to two millennials, Brains, right here on the Edge. Okay? On the Edge with April Mahoney. Down there, that is Lauren Brown from Massillon, Ohio. And right there is Lucas Shakwe. He is in Israel, but he is originally from Tembisa in South Africa, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And I picked you two for a very specific reason. You know, I know a lot of people. I could have picked a lot of young people, but you two are thought-provoking individuals, very smart, very talented, and you come from a very diverse background in many ways, but very similar in other ways. And I want my Brains to understand what's going on in the world, what your thought process is, because you're going to be responsible for me, okay? And my healthcare and my world, my water, my food, that's going to be your responsibility, okay? So I just want to know what's rattling around in your brains. You got me?
Absolutely. All right.
So now I'm going to let both of you kind of give a little introduction on who you are, and then I'm going in hardcore. You ready?
Yes.
All right. So, Lauren, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about you and, you know, your upbringing there in Massillon, Ohio.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Lauren. I am 17. I just graduated Massillon, Washington High School. And in high school, I did cheerleading, gymnastics, and track. And I was part of a lot of clubs. I enjoyed my time in high school. And I'm going to Kent State University to major in biology and hopefully to go to PA school to be an orthopedic physician's assistant.
Why don't you just be an orthopedic surgeon? You won't be nobody's assistant.
Well, I would be an orthopedic doctor then. PA school is only 3 years and it's like half the cost of medical school. So
don't worry about the cost, baby. Don't worry about it. That'll come through. Lucas Shakwe, what you doing there in Israel?
Hi, I'm good. So I'm Lucas. I'm originally from South Africa in Tembisa. And 2 years ago, I decided to drop out of South African high school when I was in 12th grade and to go on to Israel to study the International Baccalaureate Program because I felt that someone with my way of thinking and my values in life, I had to study in an environment that matched that or that allowed for me to grow. So I'm primarily interested in the arts and the sciences. With the sciences particularly, I've been active in the science community in terms of like innovating scientific projects to better my own community of Tembisa. And in terms of the arts, I'm a dancer, I'm a singer, spoken word artist. And yes, I'm excited to be here today.
Well, both of you are my loves and friends of the show. So you live in two different parts of the world, but very similar environments. Now, just from my experience, because I spent a lot of time in Ohio, they can be, I don't like to use the word racist, you know, that's just running off people's mouth, but they're pretty separatists and they have their own way of thinking. And it's been that way for a long time, pretty backwards, but again, it happens and it's not everybody, but it's a large majority. They have a large, influence when it comes to delegates, when it comes to voting, I noticed that it's not very progressive anymore. I go there and there's not even buses running in Massillon, Ohio. You know, on Sunday, everything is shut down. 5 o'clock, everything is shut down. So it's still not as progressive as some. South Africa, same thing. You grew up when Mandela was still alive. So you understand apartheid, okay? You understand what it is to be black in your own land, in your own country, with no respect. You are a black man now in the world, and you are being hunted like an animal for sport. How does that make you feel, Lucas?
Personally, it makes me feel like I am not understood, like the world just doesn't get me. I just walk on the streets and I'm seeing, and automatically people think that I'm this, I'm that, and I'm this. And they never really stop to question, like, what are your values? What are your intentions? What are you willing to bring forth to the table? So in a lot of ways, I feel that the color of my skin steps outside into the world before my brain does. And at times that was depressing for me for a very long time, because it was hard to navigate how can I execute my artistry into this world, and how can I execute my ideas, how can I make forth change when I'm being looked at that way with prejudice and being judged at the same time. So it makes me feel like the world doesn't create a platform for me to speak up, and it doesn't create a platform for me to make my thoughts heard well, and it doesn't also create a platform for me to be part of the world. So in a way, I feel like I am limited to only be in the working class industry. And I feel like I'm also limited to not step out of the box. And that's how I feel, that the world has created a box for me and it doesn't want me to step out of it.
Now, Lauren, let me ask you a question, because you have been very involved in sports. I mean, you are the top of your class, girl. You are a gymnast like no other. I was waiting for you to pop up in the Olympics. And you've also been very progressive. You know, our cousin, because if you guys don't know, this is my baby cousin, but our cousin was one of the very first black cheerleaders there in Maslin, Ohio. And you have followed in her footsteps by being, you know, acknowledged and rewarded as being a cheerleader. But you told me as we first started this interview that you have not been subjected to a lot of racism. Really? Why is
that? No, I haven't. Did you say why is that?
Yeah, and I mean, do you understand and know what racism is?
I do. Like my dad, he experienced racism, and I'm sure a lot of my friends that are of color have experienced racism, but I feel like I honestly don't know why I haven't. Most black people view me as white and say I'm too white. White people view me as black and say I'm too, I don't know, ghetto. And I'm neither of those. Like, I'm me. I'm 50-50, so there's no pushing me to one side or the other. I'm equal parts of both, and I'm proud to be equal parts of both, because we're all equal. And I'm, like, not to, I don't know, give myself too much credit, but I am, like, a role model in the classroom and at gymnastics and on the track. Like, there's very few things that I've done wrong throughout my life that could, I don't know, be viewed as something to target me for, especially like when it comes to my race.
Okay. So let me ask you another question. Have you ever been denied any opportunity? I mean, and again, you're also Miss Macedonia. Now, Miss Macedonia is, did I say that correct? Macedonia?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, I did my research, honey. Ain't been too many blacks of them ever. And I also did my research. I didn't see a lot of publicity about you in the news. What's up with that?
Me and Caleb, which was outstanding senior boy, we were in the newspaper. The picture they had taken that day of us was in the newspaper. And I did get posted a lot on social media through the school, my teachers, my coaches. But I guess probably a lot of it has to do with COVID, like not being able to get the publicity for it. Cause normally, like whenever we had our assembly, they would like have a big blown up picture of it and then it'd be covered and then they would uncover it. So it's more of a surprise. And
okay. All right. I'll buy that. But what are you going to do with that platform? How are you as a black woman, because you know, if you got a drop of black in you, they're going to call you black before they call you white.
Yes.
How are you going to use your platform with such a honor for other young Black girls, and I'm talking about the ones that are not mixed. I'm talking about other Black children to look up to you and your accomplishments and not feel substandard, like Lucas feels not seen.
I guess I would like to use my platform to, especially because a lot of the younger Black females in Massillon aren't really like participating in a lot of activities that they offer here. I would hope to get them like more involved and know that the color of their skin doesn't provide like a barrier of who can do what in Massillon. And actually the other day, I just made a Facebook post because distant friends and distant family were making some comments that I had seen. And I don't get on Facebook much, so it's kind of off-putting when the first thing I see is something about people protesting or the Black community. And I had made a post that I will unfriend you, I will block you if there's any degrading posts about protests, Black community, or what's going on in the world right now, because everyone is the same. And adults should know that words do hurt, no matter if they're on social media, in person, and that some opinions are meant to be kept to yourself, even though you shouldn't have the opinions at all.
Right. So now, Lucas, Black Lives Matter. What are they doing there in, baby, I know you had to close your eyes. I know it's heavy. I know. What are they doing there in Israel? What is the climate there? Because they're protesting all around the world.
A couple of weeks ago, I think the movement erupted, I was asking myself more or less, what is my purpose? What do I want to do? I was stressed. I was angry. There was just a lot going on. And it was on a Saturday when I saw a post that there is a Black Lives Matter protest in Tel Aviv. So I was like, I was interested to be part of it because I wanted to be active. But as I scrolled on to the advertisement, I noticed that the Black Lives Matter emblem was put inside the Star of David within the Israeli flag.
What?
So I sent a message to the organizer. And I was like, hey, I feel like it's really inappropriate to put in the Black Lives Matter emblem inside the Star of David, because that just like disorientate the whole meaning of this. We don't want to be inside the Star of David. This is not, and I'll just get onto it later. But then my point with this was that the Black Lives Matter emblem should stand on its own, because we want equality. We are not asking you all to just, you know, slither in and, you know, just blend in. We want equality. That's what we want. So flash forward, the organizer replied, and with a very vague response, which just put my energy off, because I felt like I was not heard, especially as a Black person, trying to speak on how small details can literally change the whole idea of the movement. So seeing the Black Lives Matter emblem within the Israeli flag, and having the organizer say that, oh, we are standing for Black lives, we're just showing solidarity for Black Lives in America. And my first question that popped up was, what about the Black Lives in Israel? Because there's a lot of...
Israel is in Africa, really?
There's a lot of mistreatment of Black people in the south of Tel Aviv, which is one of the neighborhoods in Tel Aviv, which is not only filled with Black people, but in the week that the Black Lives Matter movement happened in America, also there were some videos of police brutality within those communities of refugees. I want to hear people here in Israel talk about how they want to include people who are Black in the Israeli society, from making sure that they have healthcare, from taking care of the refugees, from taking care of the immigrants, because I saw this whole movement here in Israel as being performative, because that's what's been happening. We acting as if we are a trend, and it hurts me a lot because I face racism every day, and I've faced it recently, as in like yesterday at a restaurant, and I'm not a show. We are not a show as Black people, and we are not a trend. And I just wanted the organizers to understand that you guys need to protest against the government of Israel about how it is not treating Black people as equals within the Israeli society, and about how Black people still face most of the racism within Israel. Because it had me so much that now it was like, oh, Israel stands in solidarity with the Black Lives Movement in America, right? But I asked myself, haven't these people thought about the Black lives that are within Israel? Right.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit quickly about your life in Africa, okay? Mm-hmm. That is the motherland, okay? That is where civilization was first established. And apartheid, what was that like? Because that's, I'm sure you got a lot more freedom in Israel than you did in South Africa.
Yeah, like now it's just that I'm able to see racism happen to me. But when I was in South Africa, I grew up, like my childhood, it was a norm, because I didn't really realize that I was poor in a poor family because I was living around poor people. And I really didn't realize that my skin color was an issue because I was living in a community full of Black people and no one else. So growing up, it was really like a stealth journey. I didn't really face much racism because I wasn't exposed to the other side. But then as I got to high school, I just realized how separated we are actually from white schools or from schools in the suburbs, because for the debate team, we would go to schools in the suburbs where the majority of the kids there are white and the majority of the minority of the kids are Black. And you would just feel how excluded you are as a kid. Like, even though the debate, even still, like when we would debate and engage in different topics, the judges would just like give you that kind of look that, you know, you don't belong here. So as far as South Africa, the racism there is based on the fact that we are segregated. And since the segregation is so clear, you know which parts are racist and you know where to go and not to go. And I feel that in a way that kind of protected me, because I knew that, okay, if I'm in this neighborhood, I know what I'm expecting, as opposed to Israel, where I'm the very minority, where I experience a lot of subtle racism, the racism that we need to search for, the racism that somebody could just hit you and just run away. So, yeah.
So Lauren, you're nice and pretty and cinnamon and toasty brown. Do you see other, because I know that there's much darker skinned young ladies that you went to school with or live in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Do you see them feel any other sort of way? Do they ever
talk? Honestly, I have not. No, none of them have really spoken out that I have seen. I've never, whenever I talk to my friends of color, they never bring it up ever. And as far as social media goes, since, you know, you don't see very many people right now, I haven't seen anything.
Do you?
But I'm sure there are people that are darker than me that are feeling.
So how do you, well, let me ask you this. Your hair is very straight. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I know it's flat ironed. But I'm under the impression that your natural hair texture is wavy and curly because you are of mixed race. Mm-hmm. And so there's a song out by India Irie that says, I am not my hair. I am not my skin. I am the soul that lives within.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you feel about that? How do you embrace your Blackness as a Black woman? How do you let that shine? Not the fact that you're mixed, because we already know that, but how do you embrace your Blackness?
I would say my style more than my hair. I know my hair is, it's naturally really curly, but for me, the purpose behind that is not because like I'm embarrassed of being Black or anything. It's because it's easier to manage. And whenever I did cheerleading, my hair had to be all the way up, and it was just a lot easier for me that way. And I would say my style represents more of me embracing my Blackness, because I don't dress like a white girl, a typical white girl. I have like,
you don't dress like Karen.
Karen.
That's the new white girl named Karen.
Okay. I don't dress like Karen.
So is it the stereotype? Do you wear the baggy pants? Do you have your hat on backwards? Do you have your hoodie on? You know, do you talk with slang and untie your shoes? Is that what people think of us as Black people when they look at our image and our style? What, tell me a little bit about your style that embraces your ethnicity.
Wait, which one are you talking to?
You. I'm sorry. You.
Oh, me still? Yeah, my style?
Yeah. So what is your style that embraces your ethnicity as being a Black woman?
As you know, like, the Black race is very, like, big on shoes, and they have always styled their shoes, like, being a main focal piece. And, of course, my dad was, like, a shoe connoisseur. Yep. So I got most of that from him. And I have, like, tennis shoes. I like to style those differently. I was actually reading a post the other day about what, like, fashion trends Black people have started in, like, the American society. And one of them was, like, the names, like, having your name on things. And actually, I have a lot of things with my name on them. I have, like, a necklace, and I'm big on that. But, okay, like, hoop earrings, I know those are, like, stereotyped to, like, Black girls. I wear hoop earrings.
So, you use the term ghetto, and that just, that just turns me inside out, because I'm proud of the ghetto. I am from South Central LA, the 213, absolutely. But see, the story of ghetto is where the Jews came to New York, but they brought their culture. They brought their food. They brought their wares. They brought their religion. They stayed together as a cluster, and they have flourished. So a ghetto is a place that we are nourished, that we are taught, that we are bred, that we are held in solidarity, that we support one another. So don't ever let anybody say that you're ghetto and you hold your head down. You hold your head up with pride, Lucas and Lauren, okay? Because to be a part of something is far better than being a wanderer among nothing. Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about affirmative action. Both of you guys are about to go to college and get jobs, okay? You're going to be self-sufficient. You're going to be on your own. That's nerve-wracking, okay? No more mama and daddy. Lucas, you've been on your own pretty much a little bit longer than Lauren has, but you're about to step out there in the world. So when you go out there in the world and you apply for jobs, this was cute. My niece is Black and white, and I asked her once upon a time, I said, when you go to fill out your job application, what are you going to mark, Black or white? She said, Auntie, they don't have a box that says light-skinned. And I'm like, so she has diluted herself from being Black, okay? She's not trying to go there all the way, but then she wants to incorporate her white. So now there's affirmative action. Of course, you'll be able to take full-on advantage of that, Lauren, and get grants and scholarships because you're in that minority group, because you would check the Black box, okay? But then, Lucas, you don't have that opportunity because you don't have a choice. But, Lauren, you could also check the white box. Do you think that that's fair to have affirmative action and have special laws in place for people of color to be able to get an equal opportunity for an education and grants and scholarships? What's your thoughts?
I think that's completely fair because our entire lives we've been robbed of opportunities, and college is one of those for a lot of people. And like me, I did receive a scholarship for Black people through Kent. And that is a scholarship that's helping me get through without having to pay my tuition. So I'm extremely grateful that I've was given that opportunity to be able to get that from my background.
Okay. And Lucas, your thoughts?
You know, I think that if our movement, our struggle, our fight, the revolutionary that we bring forth is gonna be, or it has to be successful, problems like racial profiling on themselves, I feel like that's an issue. I just feel like we need to get to a point where we shouldn't check a box like I'm black, I'm this, I'm that, because especially for the minority of the people, like that being black people, it has been proved and found that in many institutions, there's less black people because they being racially profiled, and you know, no institution wants a lot of black people. So I just feel that racial profiling on its own, it's a really big issue. But on the other hand, I feel that maybe if there is a grants or scholarships for exclusively to black students, then the university should explicitly make a public announcement about that, rather than trying to find how many black students are in the school through like profiles and stuff like that.
That's an interesting perspective. That's honest. Okay, so what do you guys think about this white privilege? When I hear that, it turns my stomach.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
Well, it's not a thing in my world anymore, because I don't believe that anybody is above anybody. You have to earn your privilege. You have to earn your rights. And by suppressing someone, disrespecting them, putting your knee on their neck and killing them, all of this, you call that a privilege? I think that is the most ugliest thing. I was about to use another word. I had to catch myself. That's one of the ugliest things in the world. And for white folks to walk around, my girlfriend said to me, and April, I don't know what to do. I'm going to use my white privilege like it's a damn Visa card. You can't just get in the club like that, baby. You can't. So what do you think, Lauren, about the term white privilege?
I actually never thought about the way that you said, like, the white privilege being as you can get away with kneeling on someone's neck for 8 minutes and getting away with it in the beginning before the social media took over, or being able to call out names without any consequences. Or I honestly didn't think of that as part of like the definition of white privilege, but now I kind of look at it as a different way. Cause like Lucas said, when he said it was a thing, I definitely agreed with him, but no, I honestly wouldn't call it privilege. It's saddening and like sickening to even think that that term is even a thing still today in like 2020. I thought we would have advanced a lot more now, and seems like we're sort of going backwards in time again.
Well, you know what? We can change it by stop using it and stop allowing it, because it's not a privilege. And I'm here to tell you publicly, 62,000 brains, it ain't a privilege. It's a disadvantage. What do you think about voting? Let me ask you about that, okay? Are you registered to vote, Lauren? Oh, no, not yet, because you're not 18.
I'm registered
in South Africa.
Okay. I can register to vote since I will be like 18 in the next presidential election.
And so is that on your agenda?
It's something that I definitely want to do, but I have not done yet.
Okay, that's good. And Lucas, what is the opportunities that you have to vote in South Africa now? Well, I don't know. What is that?
I'm already a registered voter. I registered about like 2 years ago when there were elections. But I don't think there are upcoming elections, but my perspective on voting, for that matter, I think that everyone should take a stand to vote, because I see this issue of people not voting as just because they say, oh, I'm apolitical. I'm not political at all. I prefer to be apolitical and not participate. But it affects everybody. Your vote literally affects everybody. It affects the schools, especially in South Africa. It affects the school systems, how much school budgets, schools that are mostly disadvantaged receive, how much grants people receive, how much the nation can advance to stability. So I feel that any breathing human being that has the ability to vote should vote.
Yeah, they should. Because if you don't stand for something, you're going to fall for anything.
Exactly.
We done fell for a knucklehead. Woo, good Lord have mercy. And so it's so important to have a voice and to raise your voice, but in a constructive manner. Let's move on to dating and and the world of dating. Lauren, you know, you're going to Kent State, okay? And I know that you are in a committed relationship with your sweet thing right now. I ain't trying to cause you no problems. Okay. But, you know, college is very different. And it's going to be a smorgasbord of opportunities to look at, even if you don't date anybody. And so, let me cut that. I'm going to cut that. So hang on. I want to phrase it a different kind of way. Okay, great. So now let's talk about the world of being independent and being on college campuses. You know, there's a lot to consider, Lauren, and I really want you to think about that because I live right here by University of San Diego. And girls are being sexually assaulted. They're being attacked. They're being targeted. But also, they're not being very responsible, in my opinion. You know?
I agree.
Booty shorts is okay, but there's a time and a place. Drinking is okay, but there's a time and a place. Safety is okay, time and a place. Because there's a smorgasbord of opportunities once you get into the college arena. I mean, you know, it's going to be on and popping. You're not going to be the celebrity that you were in Massillon, Ohio. You're just going to be one of the flock. And so what are some of the things that you think about when it comes to your safety, your security, and your personal responsibility moving into, you know, the world of being a college student?
So my mom is very, I depend on her a lot, honestly, for how old I am. But it's not, like, I have my own responsibilities. Like, I take care of what I need to do, but she still helps me out a lot. We're really close, so getting my own apartment is going to be difficult because I don't know how to live without her. But for like the basic responsibilities of like cleaning, I can't really cook, but I have roommates for that. And as far as safety, I have my car, so hopefully I won't be walking anywhere that much because I do think about that. Like even at my house, when I'm getting out of my car at night, I look around first. Or when I'm getting into my car, I look underneath the car and I look in the back seat to make sure no one's in there. Cause I don't know. I'm just afraid that someone will be there. And for my apartment, you obviously have to have like a key to get into the complex. And I feel pretty safe, but there's a possibility that I'm not going to be.
Well, you know what? You don't have to be on a college campus, baby, not to be safe. And let me tell you, how somebody put a roofie in my drink. And I stepped right back on his foot with them stiletto heels. He probably had to get his toe amputated. So you have to watch people. You got to watch the girls just like you got to watch the guys, okay? Because there's a lot of people that are out there that are jealous. You know, you don't have to worry about looking up under your car. You get you a self-defense class and some mace. And you go asshole crazy on anybody that comes near you, okay? So don't even worry about that. Lucas, you are in a war-torn country, okay? We talking about bombs going off and tear gas and all of that ugliness. How in the world do you feel safe?
I honestly, though, I really had to adjust to not being safe and to understand that firsthand by coming to Israel, a war-torn zone, I had to understand that I'm taking a risk with my life, and I had to prepare my family for that. I had to make them understand that I'm going to this country specifically for a reason, and I know that my life is at risk, but I'm going to try and keep myself as safe as possible, but I can't really prevent it because earlier this year, there have been bombs. Literally, I'm always, like, almost all the time, we always have drills going on around. Like, we're in the apartments where I live, just underneath, there's a shelter in which we can quickly run to when there's a bomb alert and stuff like that. But then there were moments when bombs really got close to where I live and really, like, hit homes next to where I live. And I asked myself, what if this happens to me? But I feel that I've gotten to a point where I don't know how to say this in such a way that it will sound digestible, but I'm gonna say it anyways. I got to a point where I had to understand that if a bomb does land into my apartment, then that's happening for a reason.
And you know what? That's how I feel about the coronavirus, okay? Yeah. Let me ask y'all real quick. Are y'all anti-mask or pro-mask?
I'm pro-mask. I live in the hippiest country because at this point, almost everything is open. People are walking all around without masks and masks. People are not taking responsibility. The cases have been dramatically increasing. So I feel that me especially, I should protect myself because as soon as there are flights and I'll be able to fly home, my grandmother is 85 years old and I would want her to live longer, to see my life flourish and to see the lives that I impact and to see the future world. So I'm taking precautions.
Lauren, you pro-mask or anti-mask?
Myself, I'm anti-mask, but I definitely think it's based off of personal preference. So I choose not to wear a mask when I go out, but I also don't go out that often. But like when I'm working, I wear a mask to protect other people, not me. And
you care about other people's safety before your own safety? I'm just asking.
No, but I'm saying like we're wearing them at my job, not to protect the workers, but to protect like who I'm spotting and because I'm a tumbling coach. Okay. So to protect the athletes more than to protect myself.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm pro-mask because it's about protecting me. who's gonna be on the edge if, you know, if you ask me? My goodness. You have to take it seriously. It's like the devil, young people. It's invisible. And you fighting the evils of the world every single day. You can't see it. You can't see the air. You can't see people's thoughts. You can't see people's intentions. You can't see their reasoning behind what they do. It's invisible. But know that it can be evil and it can be harmful. Absolutely. And so you have everything in the world to live for. And if it's a minor inconvenience to cover your face, you know, these governors are out here fighting for other people's lives. They could be at home chilling, okay? But they are fighting and they're taking, you know, a bullet in their back every single day. And then you got this other gentleman, number 45. I can't put that filth on my tongue. You have this other individual out there encouraging people not to take care of themselves. Don't care about nothing. An equal opportunity hater, not just black people, old people, white people, Chinese people, Jewish people, disabled people. He's marked them all. So it's a personal responsibility that I encourage you to really think about. You know, yes, it is an inconvenience and it's not attractive. You know, Mr. Magnificent bought me one of them face shields. I love it. But again, it's about protecting yourself. So we've talked about safety. We've talked about security. We've talked about voting. We've talked about Black Lives Matter. Now let's talk about the future. Where's your future headed, Lauren? Once you get there and you know you are a woman of prestige and you have your medical credentials and you are making an impact in the world, what is that going to look like for you? Do you have any idea what that might feel like?
I don't know if this is a bad thing to say, but I don't want to be living in Massillon, Ohio anymore. I want to go somewhere where there's more opportunities, and like we don't even have a hospital here anymore, so I want to be somewhere where I can grow and I can reach more people I can help, because I want to be a healthcare worker because life is like one of the most like valuable things. Actually, no, it is the most valuable thing that you could give a person. And if they're in pain, if they're down on themselves because they can no longer function the way they used to, then that's what I want to be able to help them with. So that's what I want my future to look like.
Okay, so baby, you can start by wearing a mask. I just food for thought. I'm just throwing it out there. But if you are looking to support, take care, nurture, want to be there for people, you've got to take care of yourself first, and you've got to be that responsible person. And this is your first test in that task. Lucas, baby, what does your future look like? after you come here to LA to be with me? Because we're going to get turned up.
Hopefully that's going to happen. But, oh, it seems like I have this deep feeling that I'm really following a very unconventional lifestyle. But I see my future as an artist, because my primary goal in being an artist is to make people be more aware of themselves, especially African young people, because I wasn't so much aware of myself. But then through art, through dancing, through learning or taking courses of African studies and finding more about those, I got to learn more about myself. So I think my future is headed to teach and to help other young people like myself who are in war-torn zone areas and in segregated places in Africa, to just help them be more aware of themselves and be more realized of their purpose in life.
Well, I don't ever want you to give up on your dream of creating renewable and sustainable energy, because that is one of the things, you know. He lives in a country, Lauren, where they have to share the electricity. It's load sharing. So 3 or 4 days, they get the load. The next city, you know, like Canton or Akron, they get the load. So then they're without electricity. They're without refrigeration. They're without, you know, lighting, you know, just the basic necessities, the pumps to run the water. So those are things that are critical. I mean, that's nothing special. You know, and Maslin doesn't even have a hospital anymore. I don't know who in the world thinks that they could live without a hospital. I don't understand that, you know. And how could these funds and the money be diverted from necessary essentials as hospital, transportation, food, all of that? So I want you to think about that. And no, you may not want to live in Maslin, but you might want to be an innovator and an influencer for the young people that are coming up behind you in Maslin, for the young Black women that are being underserved and overlooked, that don't have the pretty straight hair, that don't have the pretty cinnamon skin, that don't have the opportunities to go to Kent State, that may not want to be a gymnast or can't be a gymnast, because people are looking at that. Do we really want this girl traveling with us around, you know, these states? Those are just some things to think about. Lucas, I want you to, again, to stand, you know, stand on solid ground. Feel the fear and do it anyway, baby. Walk on water like Jesus did, okay? Mm-hmm. Be the man that you are supposed to be. Go out and create some sustainability, some renewed energy. Go back to Tambisa and encourage other young people and older people that, you know, like you told me once upon a time, your family had no faith that in you and what you were looking to accomplish. Your father told you to give up, but did you give up? No, you went along with it. Absolutely. You are our future. You mean everything to me. I adore both of you from the bottom of my socks, because my heart just isn't deep enough. And I get so full when I think about it, because I'm depending on you to carry me through and to make a new world. Thank you so much for being here on The Edge with me, for being open, for being honest, for being vulnerable. I hope both of you learned something. I learned a lot from you. And we just have to keep on doing what we're doing. But we got to do it a little bit better and have a heightened sense of awareness. It's not about you. It's about us. Okay? I love you, baby brains.
Love you. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
God bless.
Bye.
Bye, Lucas.
Bye.